Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder when I drop the kids off at school for the last day of school and deliver an episode to you while I walk home. I'm Brendan Riley. Well, greetings, listeners. I speak to you while I walk by a Caballero. Wow, that's a car I have not seen in a while. You know, it's like a pickup car, like a Ranchero or a, what's the most, El Camino? But it's a Caballero. How hilarious. And it's driven by an architecture firm, which is even weirder, question mark? Well, it is June 5th, and it's the last day of my children's school. So it's the last day in which I have a reliable 20 minutes to talk to you without carving out space to make one. So this is probably the make or break moment. After this, I'll be recording episodes, catch as catch can, or I'll get into a regular habit of going for a walk in the morning, which I probably will do because I need some exercise and it's a nice break. Okay, so welcome to Pick Up and Deliver. I wanted to share one other thing about the week or a couple days ago that I thought was, I guess, worth sharing. So I've mentioned a couple times that my son is not as much of a gamer as the rest of the family, but he has lately been trying to play more games. And the other day, it was sort of evening and we were all settling into our own after dinner activities. And my daughter and I were kind of getting ready to play a game. And he said, "Hey, can I play a game?" And we said, "Sure." And I asked what he wanted to play. And he said, "We'll go pick." And he picked Sushi Go. Which Sushi Go is fun. I like it. It's, you know, relatively short. My daughter was sort of, "Oh, I don't want to play that." She wanted to play something a little meatier, but I said, "Come on, it'll be fun." Turns out, it was really fun. We all played Sushi Go. If you haven't played it, it's a drafting game like Seven Wonders where you get a hand of cards, you pick one, pass it along, and you collect sets in various ways to get points. And we all had a great time. And we got done. And then he said, "Can we play another game?" So we played Love Letter. And he won, which his excitement at winning against his sister and I is pretty high because usually one of us wins most games. So he was very excited about that. And then on top of that, after that, we played Walk on Fire, which is another fun one, another set collecting game that involves a tactile flipping of cards. You're Walk is W-O-K, so you're actually doing it's a stir-fry themed game from Green Couch. And then we played Ravenous River. So we actually played a whole bunch of short games over the course of about an hour and a half. And we just had a great time. It was a really nice night because the last few times I've tried to do games with my kids, with both of them, it often ends up in hurt feelings in one way or another. I think I mentioned on the episode that we tried to play Agricola. And we usually kind of make room for him to play a little suboptimally, but it ended up in this big argument. And it was an interesting and kind of a bummer of experience. So this last evening, playing a bunch of shorter games, was really quite fulfilling. And I'm glad that we had the opportunity. So I just wanted to share that. Today I am continuing the series I started a couple episodes ago about Kickstarter. I wrote out sort of 5 different ideas for episode topics, and I'm going to see. I may use 2 of them in this one. We'll see if the first thing lends itself to 10 minutes of monologue or if I run out of space sooner. If you recall, in the last episode about Kickstarter, I talked about the original philosophy of Kickstarter, this notion of Kickstarter is for dreamers. The idea that the independent publisher, the person with a dream who's not a professional, would use Kickstarter to make their game. Well, I would say the other big thing that the big impression that people have, so much so that some people will just say, "This is what Kickstarter is," and they will ignore that other original philosophical intent, is the idea that Kickstarter is a pre-order system. Now, if you go into a discussion of Kickstarter anywhere on BoardGameGeek or Reddit, and you post, "Kickstarter is just a pre-order system," I guarantee you'll get I guess what in a different spot we might call a grognard. You'll get somebody who comes in and says, No, it's not. Kickstarter is an investment, or it's a, I don't know why I'm using that voice. Somebody who will assert the idea that Kickstarter is not a pre-order system and to assume it is to underestimate the risks you're taking. Fair enough. But I still want to talk about the idea that people have and that a lot of businesses have of Kickstarter as a pre-order system. So there is a heavy economy element which ties into the Kickstarters for Dreamers angle that I wanted to talk about that connects to Kickstarter as a pre-order system. So let's the big place where we're seeing this as a thing is when well-established companies use Kickstarter to fund their next game. I would say, I mean, we've seen this with some very well-established companies like, I guess, Bezier Games uses it a lot. They're a company that was around before Kickstarter. AEG has used Kickstarter a couple times. So those are companies that traditionally have done distribution first and have kind of gone into Kickstarter. There are some companies that have come up really strongly since Kickstarter emerged and it's become part of their business model. One of those would be Stegmaier Games, the makers of Viticulture and Scythe. Now, of course, they have moved away from Kickstarter and are not using Kickstarter anymore. Instead, they're using a pre-order system like Stronghold Games does. But then you have companies like Tasty Minstrel Games, which they do still publish. They do publish some games without doing Kickstarter. But when they do deluxe editions of games, the deluxe edition is almost always available just through Kickstarter, as far as I know. And the 800-pound gorilla on the block, or gorillas, are the super elaborate miniatures games makers. There are sort of three that come to mind. There's Monolith, who made the Conan game, and they recently did a massively successful Batman game, which is, I mean, massively successful in terms of raising money. They haven't actually published that yet. Then there's a company called, I think they're called Mythic Games. They're the ones who did the Hellboy Kickstarter, which was the first miniature crazy Kickstarter that I participated in. But there's a variety of those. They did a couple other games as well. And then the big one on the block is a company that used to be called Cool Mini or Not. Now they're called Seamon or Come On. It's funny, everybody calls them Seamon, but it seems to me like C-M-O-N is the abbreviation for Come On. It was like, come on and play a game. So I'm surprised people don't call them Come On. Anyway, Seamon. They have this very strong reputation of doing two or three Kickstarters a year in which they produce a game with a whole bunch of plastic miniatures. Their first and most massively successful run at that was a game called Zombicide, which I mentioned previously, and has come out with many expansions. I think they did three or four seasons of regular Zombicide, and then they've done two seasons of Zombicide Black Horde, or they did Black Horde and they did Green Horde. Now they did like Zombicide Aliens. So this is a long-running system that people still really enjoy. But then they've done a couple others. The two big Eric Lane games, Blood Rage and Rising Sun, were both Seamon games. And then they've done a couple others as well, Massive Darkness. And oh man, there's so many. There's one where you're little chibis fighting each other. Super Dungeon Explorer, that's not what I'm thinking of. Starts with an A. Oh, Arcane something? Anyway. So, in all of these cases, the model that they're working on is not, you're helping a little company fulfill a dream. It's, we are an established company, we know what we're doing, Kickstarter is our model for marketing, for gauging audience interest, and often for distributing the game. Companies like Seamon and this Monolith have kind of moved away in some places. They've moved away from making games for retail at all. That Monolith, they just flat out said they're not going to sell the Batman game retail. Seamon did a relatively successful game. I say relatively successful because by Cool Mini or Not standards, it was not that successful, but as far as any other publisher goes, it was wildly successful. And that's Hate, which was so mixed because it sort of reveled in a kind of juvenile delight for violence and sort of ridiculous language and whatnot. It's sort of a ridiculous game in a lot of ways. But again, that was a minis heavy game that they said was only going to be available on Kickstarter and maybe at conventions, but they'll never sell it retail. So what's going on when these big companies with relatively reliable production chains use Kickstarter as their means for developing pre-orders? Well, first off, they make a crap load of money compared to distribution channels. I don't know how much you know about the distribution model, but generally the company that makes the game will need to sell it for 5 times the cost shipped of the game. So if my company, Rattlebox Games, we make a small box card game that costs $4 to produce in China, put on a boat, send across the ocean, put on a truck, drive it to our distribution facility here in Chicago. To do all that, if that costs us $4 a copy, that game should be $20 by the model of the market. And that's because the distributor is going to pay me 40% of the cost, maybe 45 or 50 if I was a very successful company. But generally, they're going to want to pay me 40 because the game stores are going to want to pay between 50 and 60. And that 40 to the distributor, I'm paying shipping to get those games to the distributor. And then they're paying 40% of that cost. So, for example, in my game that cost me $4 to make and get to my door, and that's just to make it, that's not paying anybody, $4 to make and produce and get to my door, then the distributor will give me $8 for it, game stores will give them $10, and they'll sell it for $20. Well, there's a big gap between $8 and $20, and in that $4 is my entire profit. Well, if I get to sell it for $20, now I've made $16. Oodalolly. That's a lot of money. That's where the difference comes from. If you're a game company and you sell it direct to the consumer, either through your website or through Kickstarter, you cut out the distribution and you cut out the retail store and you get all of that profit. So big companies want to do that too, right? They like profit. It also helps companies gauge the demand for a game. That every person who backs on Kickstarter is a guaranteed sale of the game. It's not someone who's interested in it later. This is true of pre-orders as well, but less. But Kickstarter is more reliable in that way. And what makes Kickstarter attractive for big companies is the same thing that makes it attractive for small companies. It's the transfer of risk. I spent a long time explaining which companies are using Kickstarter, and I guess I didn't get into the meat of why it's controversial. So there are people, quite a few people in fact, who feel like big companies should not be using Kickstarter in this way, because Kickstarter is meant to be an opportunity for small companies. And when big companies are using Kickstarter, they drown out the little companies. That the big trees throw shade on the forest floor and the small trees can't rise. So when you're asking yourself what's Kickstarter for, and you're looking at a game project, a big thing to do is ask yourself, which kind of company is this? Is this a boutique publisher with one or two games under their belt? Well, a significant part of what you're doing is helping them get off the ground. And you're recognizing there's a bit more risk in this purchase. A big company, something like CMON, there's less risk in the purchase. It's a tested company, they've got a long reputation of delivering games. And so you know that when you're buying it, you're really pre-ordering the game. You're not helping a fledgling company get off the ground. So I'm curious, for those of you who've used Kickstarter or have questions or comments about it, what do you think? Should the designers, okay. For those of you who have used Kickstarter or have ideas about it, what do you think? Should both of these landscapes be part of the Kickstarter experience? Should the big companies still be using it? Should little companies get out of the way? We have too many game companies already, many people say. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts? Also, what are your experiences? What are some Kickstarters that you've backed? What do you find are the pitfalls? What are the things you look for in a Kickstarter? In the next segment, I guess I'll point to what are the things I think a good Kickstarter campaign needs, and how do I decide when to back something? Well, thanks for listening. It's been a pleasant walk. Hopefully you've enjoyed yourself as well. If you have comments or questions, please reach out. We're on BoardGameGeek, Guild 3269. I'd love to have some comments from you. We're getting some good conversation going there. I'd love to hear a bit more what you think about Kickstarter or any of the topics that we've explored on the show. If you want to reach out to me individually, you can message me on BoardGameGeek. Wombat929 is my username. Or you can drop me an email, brendan@rattleboxgames.com, or contact me through our website, rattleboxgames.com. Well, I hope that this walk was pleasant for you, and I look forward to talking to you again. In the meantime, here's hoping your next walk is as pleasant as mine was. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Quite a truck, and it's not really a car, and you'd be testing your luck if you drove it very far. But you can keep that El Camino, or your Brat, or Caballero, for any man knows where it's at, he'll drive a Ford Ranchero.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.